Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The 06 midterm elections were bad for the GOP. But Tuesday's election this week may have marked the end of an era for the Republican Party. The House, Senate, and White House all gone for them now. A big defeat in big numbers. And a new face of America, young and minorities, coming out to vote Democratic. Today, top Republicans are convening in Virginia to survey the party's future. How do they grow their ranks, bring in new voters, agree on core priorities, and answer what went wrong? We'll talk to conservative thinkers about the way forward. This hour, On Point, the GOP in defeat and their debate on how to rebuild. You can join the conversation. What sent the Republican Party off the rails? What could bring it back? Special welcome today to our newest listeners on WQCS HD2 in Fort Pierce, Florida. We're glad to have you. Joining me first today from Arlington, Virginia, is Jonathan Martin, senior political writer for Politico. And over the past few years, he has logged many miles reporting on the GOP. Jonathan, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Tell us about this meeting in Virginia. Who's getting together? What's the agenda?
Sure. Well, I reported this last week on Politico.com. About 20 conservatives are going to meet today out in the Shenandoah Valley at the home of Brent Bozell. Brent Bozell is sort of a prominent figure in the conservative movement. He leads a sort of a media watchdog group on the right. He also happens to be the nephew of the late William F. Buckley, Jr., so an important figure. Also there will be folks from the social conservative wing of the party, Tony Perkins, who's a familiar face on TV, who works for the Family Research Council, Grover Norquist, who folks may know as sort of the anti-tax crusader, so the fiscal conservative wing will be there as well. And, you know, other people who are sort of familiar names in Washington, less so outside. And basically, they're trying to figure out how to be relevant again, what their place is in what is now a minority party, and what they can do to get power back first in these midterms in 2010, and ultimately of the White House in 2012.
Jonathan, who's not going to be at this meeting? What wings may not be represented? Is this still a united GOP?
Well, I think the moderate wing of the party is extraordinarily weak, bordering on extinct. What was so telling about Tuesday night, besides the presidential race, is that Chris Shays on the Gold Coast there in Connecticut was knocked off, which makes the entire New England region controlled by Democratic members of Congress. There is not one Republican House member in all of New England for the first time since the founding of the Republican Party in the 19th century. That is a profound change and says a lot about the realignment in the two parties. And look, here is the challenge if you're a Republican. Yes, it was a tough environment. Yes, President Bush made it difficult, and the economic crisis perhaps broke the back of any prospects you may have had. But beyond that, if you drill deeper and look demographically at Obama's coalition, you've got to be worried. The Republican Party is increasingly white, rural, and old in a country that is increasingly less of all those things.
And you say, I mean, never mind one particular region, your headline today is GOP in dire straits. You look right across the country, even beyond Capitol Hill and the White House, at how the numbers have flagged.
That's exactly right. They have 21 governors now, which is a huge come down from where the party was just a few years ago. They used to control a lot of state houses, and it's probably going to get worse in 2010 in some of these big states that have still managed to elect Republican governors. They have fewer state legislatures now. Only 14 states in the country are controlled, state house and state senate, by Republicans. This is now emphatically a minority party in this country, which is shocking given the rise to prominence in the Bush years. You had complete control of House, Senate, and White House by Republicans for a major chunk of the Bush 8 years. That is all gone now, and it's not only a repudiation of President Bush, but I think it also speaks to where demographically this country is headed, and the Republican Party has got to figure out a way be relevant to folks who are under 40, who are minorities, who are culturally not tied to race, region, religion in the way that many folks who are older in this country are. People are just not caught up in the sort of baby boomer Vietnam era culture wars anymore. And a lot of ways, that's how the Republican Party has survived in recent years. They got to figure out something different.
Jonathan Martin, always great to hear from you. Senior political writer for Politico, politico.com, with us there from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Of course. Enjoyed it. Thanks.
Joining me now from Washington is Peter Berkowitz. He's a senior fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution, served as a senior advisor on foreign policy for Rudy Giuliani's 2008 presidential campaign. Peter Berkowitz, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
And with us from Arlington, Virginia, Tony Fabrizio, partner with Fabrizio McLaughlin & Associates, research and consulting firm. He's been in the thick of GOP politics and presidential campaigns for many years. Tony, welcome back to One Point. Great to have you.
Great. Thank you for having me, Tom.
Tony, first to you. Was there any way to do better? Is this all about a bad economy and a bad environment? Jonathan Martin, you hear, says no. How do you interpret what just happened and where the GOP sits today, Tony?
Well, I think, first of all, there is no question that the economic meltdown had a profound effect on the election. But I think you need to go back and look at the late summer, and you saw leading up to the conventions that John McCain was certainly within range or even with Barack Obama or maybe even leading him. So there were a lot of questions that were unanswered about Barack Obama that could have been answered early on. Now, at the end of the day, with the economic tidal wave that took over have washed a lot of that away? Probably so. However, what we saw on Tuesday night was, you know, earth-shaking because of the states where Barack Obama was able to do it. The coalition of states that were once considered to be lock Republican states are gone. I mean, you know, in 1996, Bob Dole managed to carry Virginia and North Carolina and Indiana. Here you had John McCain losing those three states. So, I mean, it's very, very, very important that we understand that what we thought was our electoral map is now no longer our electoral map.
Peter Berkowitz, fundamentally, what is going on with the GOP? Time magazine headline here, the GOP fallout, cue the circular firing squad, anticipating a big debate. On the other hand, we've got Stu Rothenberg saying, Republicans, this is the first day of the rest of your lives. Of course, it's kind of a nothing left to lose tone to it. What has fundamentally happened inside this party, Peter?
Well, I'm anti-firing squads and pro for this is the first day of the rest
duly
of
noted.
The party's life. Tony's right. It was an extremely unfavorable environment for any Republican, any conservative running this year. In late June, the experts, I mean, the real students of American politics, the pollsters, actually anticipated that McCain would enter his convention 10 points down, and by mid-September might be 15 points down, that he didn't actually is a credit to him. That said, what happened is what often happens in American politics. One party's been in power for a long time. They made mistakes in regard to the reconstruction in Iraq, the bad response to Katrina. Republicans are blamed for the economic meltdown, and the public punished the party in power. This is not surprising. It's certainly not astonishing. So what conservatives have to do is sit down and regroup and figure out how once again to assemble a majority that gets 50% plus one vote.
We'll look at what that sit down and what that regroup might look like. But Tony Fabrizio, your headline recently is top GOPers, it's Bush and Robe's fault. Is it as simple as that, Tony? Where do you put the finger of blame?
The point of the article, or the point of the piece, is that when you look at what happened underneath during the Bush years, you see that in many respects, Republicanism or conservatism lost some of its brand differentiators, like smaller government, like less government spending, no child left behind. I mean, those were all things that conservatives bristled at. And in fact, there was a survey released by another group called the American Issues Project, where it looked at several battleground states, and one of the findings was that Republicans were no longer identified, and in fact, Democrats beat Republicans in those states on issues like spending and taxes and size of government. So when you lose part of your identity, it makes it very difficult to have a differentiation and win voters based on a differentiation.
You say the future debate inside the GOP boils down to Bushism versus Reaganism, but here we've got David Frum writing today that we're going to go have to have a back to basics. There will be a back to basics urge, but he says it's not going back, about going back to Reagan. He says the Reagan chapter is a finished chapter. There are new issues, Tony.
Well, it's not. That's a misreading. The point about it, a point about our piece was, is that we forgot the principles of Reaganism. Reagan's principles are timeless. It's a function of the principles and adapting those principles to the time you live in now. And the principles we got away from is we got away from those principles of smaller government. Government is not the answer. You know, runaway federal spending, individual freedom, hope, opportunity. We got away from all of those things. And, you know, this problem just didn't happen 2 months ago, 6 months ago, 8 months ago. You know, this problem started the day after George Bush was inaugurated for the second time. And after the 2006 election, our solution was to sit around and wait for Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid to run the party, to run the country off the rails, and they didn't do it. And so now, let's hope that our solution isn't that we wait for Barack Obama and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi to do it, because we may be sadly disappointed, and while we're waiting for that to happen, they may co-opt a number of our issues.
Richard Viguerie, who we've talked to many times here, says there are going to be just some massive battles for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. We'll look at that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the Republican Party in defeat and the debate over how it should rebuild. The GOP's self-examination here after its across-the-board Tuesday drubbing. Tonio Fabrizio joins us from Washington, longtime research and strategy guy in Republican circles with a big view of what's gone on with the GOP. And Peter Berkowitz from the Hoover Institution at Stanford, conservative circle there, former senior advisor to Rudy Giuliani on foreign policy in the 08 campaign. Peter Berkowitz, you've talked about a three-legged stool underneath the party's great success in recent decades. What did that look like, and how do those legs sprawl now?
Right. This gets back to the question about Ronald Reagan, and the question there, I think, is not whether to go back to Reagan, but what to learn from him. And one of the things to learn from him is the necessity for conservatives, Republicans, to build a big tent. That tent has to be home to several groups. It has to be home to social conservatives, who put the emphasis on preserving traditional morals, their religious values, and so on. The tent has to be home also to economic conservatives, who put the emphasis on small government, economic opportunity, low taxes. It has to be home to the security hawks, those who believe in a strong national defense. And maybe today it has to make less room, maybe, but maybe not, for the cultural warriors. That's maybe a fourth leg. Another way of thinking of it as social conservatives, libertarians, and neoconservatives. If you look at the numbers, it's hard to see how a conservative party in the United States can get 50% plus one if it can't find a way to weave together these three groups.
Those three groups plus maybe more. Let's turn to San Diego and Roger Hedgecock there, nationally syndicated talk show host, former mayor of San Diego. For more than a decade, he was top fill-in host for Rush Limbaugh. He was the author of the series of books, The Conservative Voter's 2008 Field Guide. Roger Hedgecock, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, thanks for having me.
How do you think the GOP puts it back together?
By going back to first principles. I think, Tom, that what we proved out here in California in the Proposition 8 fight, which was a traditional marriage definition being put into our state constitution, here and in Arizona and in Florida, the Obama folks, of course, here overwhelmingly won this election, 2-1, and yet many of those Obama voters, something like 40% of them, voted for traditional marriage. I think first principles for the Republican Party brings minorities back in. The black voters, for example, in California were almost 90% in favor of Proposition 8 and the definition of traditional marriage. The Latino voters were over almost 60% in favor of traditional marriage. These are the kinds of issues that win in the minority community, standing up for family and standing up for first principles. So I'm convinced, even in California, that the election results show the Republican Party the way back to majority.
So you think that the GOP can come back on culture war, cultural warriors? What will bring you back, Roger?
Well, I don't know about warriors. I know that we stand for first principles. And when we stand for life, and when we stand for family, and when we stand for country and small government and individual liberty, we win elections.
And you've been a big Sarah Palin supporter in the election season. Do you think she's the future, or a flare that's flared and gone?
Well, for the mainstream media, Sarah Palin has become a laugh doll. But for a broad cross section of entrepreneurial middle America, she is an icon. The question of her future, Tom, is a question she's going to have to answer, and it may be answered if Ted Young wins the Senate seat in Alaska and then resigns. Under Alaskan law, it's possible that
Ted
Sarah
Stevens.
Palin
mm-hmm.
could choose for herself a Senate role and appoint herself to the United States Senate, and then she would have a national visibility and a national role to play in the next 4 years or beyond.
Tony Fabrizio, how do you see first culture war as a way back, or first principles, as Roger Hedgecock puts it? He points to California's rejection of gay marriage in its constitution, in the referendum, in voting on Tuesday. Do you see that as a path back to expand the demographic and the appeal of the GOP? And then what about Palin, Tony?
Well, first, with all due respect to Roger, 71% of African Americans supported the measure, and 63% of Hispanics supported the Prop 8 measure. But it goes back to what Randy said before. If you assume that the Republican coalition is a four-legged stool, and it is a four-legged stool, I've done extensive studies into the party itself, then by fighting culture wars, what you're doing is you're emphasizing one leg of the stool to the exclusion of the other legs of the stool. And frankly, I don't think that we could have had a more polarizing, there was no question about what way Barack Obama's position was on the gay marriage amendment, either in Florida or California or Arizona, and Barack Obama still managed to win both of those states. I don't think there was any question that, you know, millions of dollars of ads were spent about Barack Obama supporting infanticide, and Barack Obama still won. I think there is a misunderstanding about what voters' imperatives are. And if you miss the mark about what those imperatives are, you're going to lose the election. It, you know, when 60% of the voters are saying they're voting based on the economy, talking about gay marriage, while it is an important issue to a lot of voters, takes the back seat when they can't afford to make ends meet every month. As far as Sarah Palin is concerned, I think Governor Palin came on the scene. She created a lot of excitement in the base. I think that being the victim of the national media makes you a martyr and makes people more defensive of you. In other words, there are a lot of conservatives there today that defend her that may not defend her in a nomination fight, and I think she's going to face a much different ground game if she decides to seek the nomination in 2012 than she faced by being John McCain's running mate. So we'll see what kind of metal she has if she gets in that fight.
Roger, Peter, I want to come to you on those, but let's turn to our listeners. Steve in Providence, Rhode Island. Steve, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I thought I'd just talk about, I'm 48, I'm a white male Republican, and I didn't vote for a Republican this time at all, mostly because I feel like the party kind of left me. I don't feel like I left the party. There's a lot of things that I disagree with that's been happening with, like, our foreign policy. It's a disaster. I don't think we need to be telling other governments what they should be doing anymore. We should be part of the whole, not one in a group. I also disagree with the growth of government. The fiscal conservatism is one of the tenets of republicanism, and I kind of feel that the social conservatism, I could pretty much leave that aside. I'm not really socially conservative.
So do you think it's ever coming back to you, Steve? I mean,
I don't. I feel like they're not listening to me anymore. It's like a train on a rail. It can't turn when the situation changes. I don't think that they're coming back to me. And I worry about when it comes to freedom, I worry about when the issue is freedom from versus freedom to. And I don't want to have somebody telling me what I can't do. And that's the way the Republican Party was supposed to be. And it's not that anymore.
Roger Hedgecock in San Diego, what do you say to Steve in Rhode Island on foreign policy, on social conservatism, even on the way freedom has been handled? He's a Republican who's not happy. How do you bring him back? How do you structurally change to make the GOP friendly to him, Roger?
Well, I think that, first of all, Steve's going to be very disappointed in the Obama administration because they're going to be restricting freedom, particularly economic freedom, by taking over wide swaths of the economy that formerly were private.
Like the banking industry that the Bush administration took over in the last month?
The Bush administration opened the door, and I think Obama's going to create a McMansion out of it. You've got the government going to control, is planning on controlling health care, financial industry, and everything else. In fact, the auto industry is being asked, they're asking Congress today to take them over. And I think the Obama administration will oblige them. So I think in terms of economic freedom and in terms of individual liberty, you're going to find the Obama administration, Steve, a huge disappointment. On the foreign policy issue, as Biden has promised us, there will be an international testing, and I'm afraid that Biden is also right in predicting that we won't like the Obama administration response to it, because it is not going to be the muscular defense of freedom that has been the hallmark of American foreign policy since Franklin Roosevelt.
But, Roger, you've got a negative message there on anticipation from the Obama administration. We hear that, maybe. But what about a positive message for your one-time GOP guy here who wants a gangplank put out to him? I don't hear that from your party.
Well, you're going to hear it very strongly. There's going to be a lot of meetings and a lot of discussion. I mean, we've suffered in the Republican Party a huge defeat. What you do after a huge defeat is you regroup. You go back to first principles and you project those, and you offer contrast to the people who are in power. The Democrats control the entire federal government. They're going to have to produce for the American public. My view is they will not be able to, because they're in a contradictory situation between their philosophy and their governing abilities. But I do believe that the Republican Party will essentially be able to rebound as we did from 76 to 80, as we did from 64 to 68. There will be a rebound here because the Republicans will go back to first principles and offer the Steves of the world individual liberty, individual freedom, life, and a muscular foreign policy of the defense of freedom.
George Will pointing out today, McCain got 46% of the popular vote. Barry Goldwater got 38.5%. And what, just 4 years later, the GOP came back way back when. Of course, it's a different day now. Let's get a call from Des Moines, Iowa, and Ben. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi,
Ben.
My take is, and I'm a Democrat, 50
okay.
years old.
Okay.
I watched with interest that, you know, Hillary Clinton and her campaign had a group of black people, prominent blacks, who were supporting her. I didn't see anything similar in the McCain campaign, and I think that Republicans are going to have to address this changing face of America in a time when we're soon going to be, if not already, more than 50% people of color. And so how is the Republican Party going to identify people that look like a Barack Obama or that don't necessarily look like the traditional Republican figure who can articulate the Republican platform? And I believe I'm for a healthy Republican Party, a healthy Democrat Party that can have that discussion. And so I'm just wondering, how are the Republicans going to address to the...
How do they do it? They certainly didn't do it at the polls on Tuesday. Tony Fabrizio, let me go to you on that. I mean, we were at the Democratic Convention in Denver. We were at the Republican Convention in St. Paul. And the difference in terms of color was absolutely striking. If you were there, you saw it yourself. I mean, you know, St. Paul was just white, white, white. What's up with the GOP on that front? George Bush came in talking a lot about Latinos and a big tent on the ethnic race front.
Well, I think that one of the lessons that we can take away from this election is that there were no bigger supporters of immigration reform than George W. Bush and John McCain. And yet Latino voters, Hispanic voters, voted against John McCain by bigger margins than they voted for George Bush just 4 years ago. And so immigration reform clearly wasn't the top issue on their mind. Again, it went back to their pocketbooks, their everyday lives, and how they can make ends meet. I think in order to attract voters, any voter, it doesn't matter if they're white, brown, black, yellow, it doesn't matter. You have to have a message of hope. You have to have a message of opportunity. You have to have an uplifting, positive vision that tells them that your life is going to be better by our principles. And certainly that is not what we heard in 2008. Not what we heard.
Peter, in St. Paul, I would have to say the tenor was white and angry, not exactly hopeful and multi-hued. How does the GOP change that?
Well, I'm going to echo Tony, you and elaborate. What you have to do is you have to move from your principles to develop actual policies. So there is no reason why basic conservative principles of limited but energetic and effective government, individual freedom, economic opportunity, there's no intrinsic reason why candidates can't make those principles appealing to blacks, to Hispanics, and others.
Absolutely.
Well, in order to make them appealing, though, you have to translate them to actual policies. Policies on energy, policies on entitlement, policies on health care, policies on taxes. You do need a positive message. This, again, goes back to what to learn from Ronald Reagan. What to learn from Ronald Reagan is not to run on issues of crime and welfare, because the Republicans were very successful. Pardon?
Of course he did.
Yes, of course he did. Again, and right, but what do we learn from that? The lesson is not now to focus on such issues as crime and welfare, because the conservatives were very successful in getting their views on those issues adopted. Mm. What to learn from Reagan is to address, to develop policies based on your fundamental principles for the issues of today. Mm. The issues of today are energy, entitlements, health care, and taxes. That's what Republicans need to do.
Roger Hedgecock in San Diego, can the GOP deliver on those? It's one thing on the culture side, but to deliver on issues and policy, can you diss government in the way many people have seen government dissed in the GOP era and still deliver on the policy front, Roger?
Well, first of all, candidates matter. When you have a very hopeful message, and Barack Obama is the best messenger for the hope for socialism being successful, just as Ronald Reagan was the best messenger for capitalism being successful. And
socialism? Are you still serious about that after the election?
Well, I'm sorry. By the dictionary definition, the kinds of takeover, as we mentioned before, Tom, of the vast swaths of the private sector to be government programs is by definition socialism. So I was using a shorthand word. I hope it's not offensive.
For Bush policy. Okay.
The fact is that the policies of big government will overreach, they will underperform, mm-hmm. they will overpromise, and they will crash and burn. But before we get there, the message of hope carried the day in the election. The candidates do matter. We did not have a hopeful candidate. We did not have an inspiring message from our candidate in the Republican Party this time around. There's no question about it. This was our Walter Mondale. So I'm sorry, but candidates do matter.
And do you see the next one out there? Do you see Palin in 2012 or somebody else, Roger?
We're going to see a lot of people come forward. There's going to be a lot of testing. There's going to be a interim elections in 2010 that will decide a lot of this. But with the Senate not going overwhelmingly Democrat, with the House not picking up the number of seats that Speaker Pelosi was boasting about just a few days ago, I think that we're set now for a reaction by the American public to turning over the reins of the entire government to a party that is determined to increase taxes and expand the power and scope of government.
Roger Hedgecock, nationally syndicated talk show host there out of San Diego. Roger, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP's self-examination after its across-the-board Tuesday drubbing. Tony Fabrizio is with us from Washington, D.C. Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, senior foreign policy advisor to Rudy Giuliani, is here. Let's go to Hank in Roxbury, Massachusetts. Hank, you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm listening to your program. I heard a lot of comments that I liked and I thought were on target. But the most important to me is that I became a Republican about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 20 years that I've been a registered Republican, I have received not a phone call, a piece of mail, any kind of contact from the party, except last week I got a letter from John McCain asking me for some money.
A little late, I guess, Hank.
Just a little bit.
But have you been a registered Republican?
Yes, for 20 years.
Do you have the wrong zip code or something? You sound like a gentleman of color.
02119, Roxbury, yes, probably.
I mean, so what do you think, what does the GOP need to do to keep you on board?
What the GOP needs to do is what I tended to hear and see in the campaign this year. When I looked at the faces of the people at the Republican convention, I didn't see hope. I saw a look of people trying to hold on to an idea whose time had passed. When I looked at the Democratic convention, I saw the faces. I saw hope. I saw a belief in the principles that really made this country great, to bring America, to make America, America for everyone, for the Republicans and the Democrats to compete on the idea that goodness is on the rise and not evil and bad name calling, to who can be the best American, who can do the most for the country and the most for all the people. To me, that sounds like that's where both parties need to go, and the Republicans especially. It sounds like that all they want is power. All I hear mostly is, how can we get back in power? How can we get back in power? What is it we have to do? What's the right catchphrase?
But not enough about hope. Hank, let us pick it up with our panel here, and thank you very much for your call. Tony Fabrizio, let's put personalities aside for a minute, because people will debate candidates, and Roger Hedgecock saying Barack Obama very good on conveying hope. But down in the DNA of the GOP, at this point in time, is there a problem with a hopeful message, Tony, or not? What's getting in the way? What's getting the static, the sort of sand in the gears on that front?
Well, what's getting in the way is finding that thing that, or finding those things that unify the party. In other words, if you look after the Clinton election in 1992, the party found itself very much in the way that we find ourselves now, and that is, what is the direction we go in? And at that point, we had not only lost control, but we had in fact lost communism and foreign policy as a major staple of the glue that held the party together.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, George Bush came into office in 2000, the Republican Party wasn't at one of its heights. During the Clinton years, Bill Clinton very effectively, after, you know, in 93 and 94 prior to the election, Bill Clinton was the thing that unified the Republican Party. And it took a few things to mobilize the party to unite, and that was Don't Ask, Don't Tell, his health care plan, his stimulus package. And then once we got power, we kind of lost our way, and Bill Clinton really co-opted a number of the policies that Republicans embraced: welfare reform, Defensive Marriage Act, school uniforms, V-chips. I mean, Bill Clinton found things that made him in the middle and, you know, put himself squarely to the middle right. In 2001, after Bush was elected, terrorism comes along. And terrorism and the war in Iraq again became the glue that brought the party together. So even though there was some grumbling and some bristling when Republicans went along with the prescription drug plan or No Child Left Behind and things like that, they still stood together because of terrorism, the war on terror, and Iraq.
But Tony, our caller Hank is saying, don't just go for enemies. Bring me a message of hope. And I wonder if there is a deep demographic problem here. I mean, is there a danger of the GOP becoming a kind of, you know, white person's party? It looked that way in St. Paul. The numbers are that way off this election. Of course, you've got a Democratic candidate of color. But could the GOP get caught in that? Is it related to the, you know, Colin Powell and others have complained about a kind of anti-intellectualism, about an anti-education theme even coming out of the GOP?
It relates to appearing to be anti all of those things. It relates to being anti all of those things. And go back to what I said before. I hope that the leaders of our party aren't sitting around staring at their navels waiting for these other guys to make a mistake so we can be opposed to them. Because that may only put a temporary Band-Aid on a longer-term problem. And the longer-term problem is we don't have a message for ourselves other than we're not them.
Let's take a call from Al in Cohasset, Massachusetts. Al, you're on the air.
Hi. Listen, appreciate the conversation. And the thing that I'm struck by, you talk about the GOP changing as a guy who voted for Obama, voted for Reagan, is that you've got 8 years of growth spreading fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I hear in your participants that we're going to go back to first principles, but every detail they provide is still Rovian fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Socialism. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you've got a 42-year-old white guy on the line and a lot of the callers that are just really seeing through that at this point. I mean, you know, the GOP is not the exclusive bastion of family values. And the you know, America has finally seen through that kind of thing. So I'm interested. You know, there's this thing down in Virginia of GOP leaders, and everybody that is going down to that is going to really continue to cement themselves into what you're saying, Tom, which is this sort of white guy, old school mentality. I don't see the GOP coming back and saying, hey, all right, we need to find the middle. What I'm afraid of is what the gentleman was just saying, which is, hey, for the next 4 years, we're just going to toss bombs at this guy, Obama, and, you know, highlight every bit of his mistakes. We're not going to come to the middle. We're not going to help the country.
Hey, and I mean, I hope they're not going there. I like the big tent optimism of the GOP. I think that brings something really vigorous to the country. But Peter Berkowitz, you hear Al's concern that the sort of Rovian tactic goes on, the kind of fear, uncertainty, doubt themes. Tony, Fabrizio's been very tough on those. Do you see that as still the envelope?
Well, I think that's a mischaracterization. I don't hear it myself, anything Rovian in supporting limited but energetic government, individual freedom, and economic opportunity. You know, the public responded very well over the summer, in August, supported John McCain's response to Russia's invasion of Georgia. The public especially kindled to John McCain's insistence that we need to build nuclear power plants and that we should engage in offshore drilling in order to achieve more energy independence. I don't see anything particularly white in these views.
But there was drill, baby, drill as the slogan that got wrapped around that, which sounded, again, kind of like, yes, it was a way to energy self-sufficiency, maybe a bit someday, but there was a kind of, you know, taunt anger in it at the same time. Was there not?
You're right. There is a problem, as has already been said, with various messengers. But the principle and the policy, it seems to me, can be separated from that particular presentation of the message. And as a matter of fact, 2/3 of America was supporting McCain's policies in this matter. I do want to add something about a particular problem that national security hawks face in our age. That has to do with the war on terror. Quite different from communism when we were facing down the Soviet Union. Soviet Union, you could see the enemy. We now face an invisible enemy. And when we achieve success, we foil terrorist attacks. The public sees nothing of that success, or they see nothing of the energetic government action that that foils attacks.
Of course, you've also had a Democratic presidential candidate, now president-elect, saying the GOP wasn't ready to go, you know, to the gates of hell, but not to the cave where Osama lived. Let's get truck driver Tommy.
Yes, but that was absurd.
Tommy in Winchester, Virginia, with your big rig. You're on the air, Tommy.
Yes, sir. I think a lot of people are missing the bottom line. I voted Republican all my life until this election. I've sat back. I've obviously been a truck driver. I listen to a lot of conservative radio and everything. And I think that the issue that the Republican Party is really missing is they're spending more time trying to manipulate me into believing the way they want to go rather than picking something that they believe in and going with it. Now, what I mean by that is they, just like the Iraq War, just like the economy, the way they're telling me what's good for me and when I have a question to ask, is just trust me, just trust me. And I've trusted them over and over again, and they've let me down because it seems like they don't, they've lost their own way. They don't know which way they're going to go. They just want to go.
Tommy, let me ask you, how did you vote this time?
I voted for Obama.
How did that feel for a Republican like yourself?
Well, the sometimes I feel you gotta, the best way to treat an alcoholic is to let them hit rock bottom, and I feel that the only way the Republicans are going to bounce back to where they need to be is to hit rock bottom, and it's kind of funny, but you know, on all the talk radio, this is exactly what they're talking about now. So maybe by me voting Obama and a lot of people like me, maybe that's the way things are going to go. Of course, the fear factor of us falling apart in 4 years and becoming socialists and communists and everything other name calling it, to, you know, my party, I guess, if you want to call it a Republican Party anymore, is calling the other side. If that doesn't happen 4 years from now, maybe we can find an agenda that we all believe in.
Tommy,
but I think that the fear. Yes.
Yeah, we hear it loud and clear there from the highway, and I appreciate your calling in. Glad you're listening as well, sending your own message there from Virginia. Let me get another call right here from Moline, Illinois, and Ron. Ron, you're on the air.
Yes, I do have a question. I've been listening to the conversation, and I'll be just very honest and say that some of what's been said kind of goes over my head. I do usually vote a split ticket, but I am a person who's against abortion. I am for a strong national defense, and I always tend to listen to somebody or someone in a party who really is going to stress and emphasize values.
How did you vote this time, Ron? Who did you vote for? Did you vote for McCain or Obama?
I did vote for McCain.
And are you feeling solid?
I heard him say that he thought conception, that life started at conception, and quite frankly, just being a very simple person, that was good enough for me.
Ron, in Moline, Illinois, thanks very much. Tony Fabrizio, you still got Ron on board, but you lost Tommy the truck driver. Can the GOP come back with, you know, the anti-abortion solid voter there, but you heard the critique from your truck driving one-time supporter.
That, you know what? We heard a lot about Joe the plumber. We should be focusing on Tommy the truck driver, because that is the fundamental problem right there. And here is a guy who voted with us and was willing to continue voting with us, but he wants to hear and make up his own mind, what is the difference between the two of us? Let me give you a fundamental example of just how screwy this is. 70% plus of Americans oppose earmarks. They understand what they are,
yep,
and they oppose them.
Okay.
Okay? We're the Republicans. We're supposed to be the party of smaller government and less wasteful spending, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're supposed to be.
Yep.
Yet the Republican caucus in Congress cannot even agree to ban earmarks. Not only can they not only agree to ban earmarks, there is nothing in the Republican National Platform, despite what our nominee said, to do away with earmarks. How can we instill the faith in people like Tommy if we don't walk the walk when we talk the talk? How can we? And how can we draw a distinction with the other side and say, this is what we stand for when we don't do it?
Pretty straightforward question. Peter Berkowitz, do the three legs of the stool still work? Is there going to be a recombination here? You heard Richard Viguerie saying there's going to be a fight for the heart and soul of the party. What does that mean? You're going to go after one another, those legs?
Well, that's the question. I mean, there's no doubt that they do work. There's no doubt that the message of the social conservatives must be honored, of the economic conservatives, of the neoconservatives.
But it didn't work on Tuesday, and it didn't bring the policy that Tony Fabrizio is saying the GOP needs when it had power.
It didn't work, but for the reasons he just outlined, that the messenger, it turns out, was defective. The Bush administration has done a terrible job of explaining the Iraq War, of explaining our achievements in Iraq. I mean, we made terrible mistakes.
The Republican caucus is not a messenger. It's the very representation of the GOP members voted into power.
Well, yes, and it's their job to formulate policies and present and contribute to the presenting of those policies to the public. Look, each part of the coalition is going to have to give up something. There's no doubt about that. But the only way for the party to come back to power is to figure out a way to make compromises with each other, but make the compromises around the core principles, make the compromises around limited but energetic government, individual freedom, economic opportunity. Each will have to give up something. The elements of the coalition found a way to work together during the Reagan era. Mm. That's the big message. So what it's going to do, it doesn't depend upon new principles. It depends upon whether Republicans and conservatives have the courage and the wherewithal to cooperate.
Tony, we're almost out of time. 10 seconds. Back in 2010, back in 2012, back in your lifetime?
Definitely back in my lifetime. All depends on what the Democrats and Obama do, but I wouldn't count on them making a mistake right out of the box. I think Obama is a lot smarter than that and learned from Clinton.
Mm. A lot to learn on all sides. Thanks for the conversation out of the GOP corner this hour. Tony Fabrizio and Peter Berkowitz, thanks very much to each of you for being with us. And listeners, thank you for joining us as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.